Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
You know, these parties get a little bit ugly because it's about, you know, wounds being opened. That's what she thinks is kind of interesting. Yeah, and, you know, it kind of spices things up. So, I mean, it's almost as if you're waiting to open a few of Flora's wounds tonight.
Okay.
And she reacts. She takes the bait in her own home.
It's important that we actually establish the society in which Violetta lived. We need to try and get a real sense of the world of the demi-monde. The world of the demi-monde was really greedy, competitive, and hypocritical, particularly among the women. The problems that Traviata presents for a director, from my point of view, are that the acts are all very short. And in that time, we have to present, for instance, in Act One, one of the most enigmatic women of her epoch, and try and show as many facets of that character as we possibly can. It's important to remember how the opera starts. It's not just a party. Violetta's having a party. Violetta's been away from society for a very long time. She's been extremely ill with consumption or tuberculosis. And this is her comeback into society. So everything depends on the success of this party. And she has to appear well. Because if she isn't well, the barone, her protector, will drop her. And so all eyes are on her.
Bravo, bravo, sarà di vivere.
I was offered the role many times before I accepted my first one, and largely because I was a little nervous about it. Well, I was nervous about it on all fronts, vocally, dramatically, psychologically. I didn't feel like I quite knew enough, you know, to tackle her. It is very demanding, and yet, as you said, it's a beautifully written and beautifully realized character, both from a libretto standpoint and musical standpoint. She's completely fleshed out, as it were, on all fronts. And so from that standpoint, it's a real joy to dive into, because it's all there. If one pays attention to the libretto and one pays attention to what Verdi wrote on the page, it's completely there.
Mm-hmm.
Alfredo is very influenced by everything what's happening around him. He has not yet the personality which can impose him in front of the audience too. He's singing a lot, and at the end you don't go home with any line of his. You go especially with Violetta's lines, with Amami Alfredo perhaps, in my opinion, or Addio del Passato, or with Germont's father Aria, with Di Provenza. And but musically, Alfredo has a lot to sing, and quite difficult, what we call as the tenors, we call the passaggio zone in our voices. So it's F, G, A flat. He has a lot to sing in that region, which is not very, also for the audience, not something very brilliant, which is, you know, the audience loves. It's something very central, but not easy. And vocally, I think, Alfredo, it's much more difficult than the people think. The fact that he reacts very violently in Flora's party, I think it's due to the fact that probably he's very young and he's probably living for the first time a big love. I don't know if it's really his first woman in his life. She's not her first, perhaps not quite the first one, the first woman in his life, but probably it's the strongest love he ever had. And he will ever have. And due to that, when he considers himself betrayed by the letter in the second act, when she's saying that she's going back to the Barone, the reaction at Flora is probably the first time when he thinks he has to prove that he's a man, and that's the way he thinks he has to behave. Which is totally wrong, of course. This youth probably gives all the energy which we need in the part.
Something about it that is just a little bit more predatory, and it also means that when you get to Siate, 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 and she's kneeling down, all of which works terrifically well. Because now you're doing this, and you just kneel up a little bit more at the end.
Yes.
It looks more crumpled. Yeah. So that you're not actually in her line of fire, so that she can have her moment, and you're just standing above her. And although what you're saying is Siate, Siate, just by your position, it's a little bit more dominant. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yes.
And I think we retrieve a little bit of what we had that way. Of course, she has to think about her future. And this is what happens in Act Two, of course, where when Germont comes to see her and says, you know, you won't always be lovely. You know, and people won't always want to make love to you. Think about it. What's going to happen then? And he breaks her down with a terrifying vision of the future. It's not just about, please be kind because my lovely young daughter is going to marry and we don't want a scandal, the fact that you and Alfredo have been living together. No, there's a lot more to it than that.
We've got to go down a slightly different thought road to get the same thing.
Yeah.
Therefore,
yeah.
It's like, you're very pretty now. But I can see where those crow's feet are going to be. As they say in Australia, what are crow's feet but the dried up beds of former smiles? But you'll be older and rattled, and he won't want to make love to you then, because he's much younger, and frankly, he's good looking like me. No, but there's all that hideous subtext in it.
Were different and morals were much stricter then than they are now, especially perhaps in the provinces, different from city life, especially in Paris or in London or the main capital. So I think that's why he does it. He's convinced that this is not good for his daughter. He wants his daughter to be married without a blemish on her name and character. And so he tries to go and separate them. But of course, as it's a love story about Alfredo and Violetta, that tends to make people think that he's the bad guy come to break it up. But I think he does it entirely for the right reasons. They both have, Traviata and Rigoletto, is the actual relationship between a father and daughter, which is seen to have been hugely important to Verdi because he lost a daughter. He writes a lot of his best music for father and daughter, and in this opera, it almost becomes a father and daughter scene between Germont and Violetta. Oh, it's a wonderful scene, I dare say, the best scene in the opera, I think, musically. I think it's a wonderful scene.
She's said she'll do whatever he asks and leave Alfredo, but before she can do that, she asks if he can hug her as a daughter, embrace her as a daughter. That always sort of just takes my breath away, because you realize how vulnerable she is. You realize how much she would have liked to have this life of his daughter, the one that's being now protected, and he's trying very hard to take care of her innocence and purity. And Violetta never had a chance at that, and she wishes for it. She's very sad at that, at not having had that, I think. And that moment is always really special for me.
Don't forget that you work, this is all of you, you work the room. Particularly you.
You call me.
Yeah, exactly. And particularly with the frenemies, who spend more time with you.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else? They have this misguided idea that probably because you're in the papers, you're the most important person in Paris. And actually she is, just by being.
It's important that we show that Violetta, or Marie Duplessis, as she was, of course, originally in real life, had in her circle some of the most important musicians. Franz Liszt was one. Poets, writers, artists of the time. And she could do that because she was very elegant, very graceful, and became, amazingly, very well read. And then, in juxtaposition to this, we have Flora's Party, which is vulgar. And indeed, you'll see in this design by John Conklin that Act One is very elegant indeed. And the colours of Act Three are very red and very gaudy. And of course, she also runs a gambling house. This is normally the time when the story stops and everybody has some sort of dance, usually not related to the opera at all. What Christina and I discussed before we went into rehearsal was the subtext that this should have about flirtation, infidelity, and it slips over into real life with the Marchese, who does give one of the dancers his car at the end.
So we have these dancers coming in who are hired by Flora, but actually secretly hired by Gaston to make Flora's life difficult and basically to, in some ways, almost ruin Flora's party. So even before Alfredo comes in and provides a lot of excitement and gossip for the choruses to feed on, there's a little story even before that is reflected in the palm reading. Andrew had told me is like, you know, this is fun for me because I get to go into the characters in this scene more than, say, I have perhaps before, because we're creating so much subtext and so much story within story in this one little section. Working with an orchestral score, in flamenco we have palmas behind us giving us the rhythm so we can listen to the palmas and listen to the guitar at the same time. We don't have that in an orchestral score. You've got the piano, you've got the orchestra. There's no one there providing those beats to keep everybody in sync. So the dancers have to really use their ear and they have to really know the score very well to know exactly where the flamenco beats are coming in when those large beats, the whole beats, might not be being used by palmas. But it is a very intricate art form in that you're using, the timing is so finite and you've got a lot of tiny little beats coming together. And as we work in the rehearsal, we are working on those muscles over and over again. The more the muscle learns it and the more the brain learns it, the faster you can do that movement more accurately.
Yeah.
One thing that is very fun for me as a choreographer with San Diego Opera is the ability to use ballet dancers and flamenco dancers. As a choreographer, it gives me a whole new set of colors to work with. And I can do things from both disciplines. And one of the places that's most apparent is with the lifts. I'm using the partnered couples, the boy-girl couples, to do lifts and turning lifts and spins. And flamenco dancers aren't necessarily taught how to do lifts. And so the flamenco dancers are learning how to do that at the same time that the ballet dancers are learning how to do footwork and use the hand movements and use a different style of arm work and use their bodies in a different way. So as a choreographer, it's like I have two keyboards to play with. I have two palettes to work with. I can take the strengths of the ballet dancers and the things that they can do with the strengths of the flamenco dancers, and I can combine them into something that is very exciting to watch and is a little bit of both.
Of the music is so pure, so clean. I think in some time it really like cameristic style, not like an opera that we suppose to know before that. For this reason, for the conductor, it's very difficult to treat this piece to make a concertazione of this piece, because it's apparently so simple. Like apparently it's simple, the music of Mozart. But how difficult it is to play Mozart? It's the most difficult composer to do, to play. And for La Traviata is same. So for the conductor, is sometimes is very strong, sometimes is very light, sometimes we have to keep this tension from the first bar of the prelude until the last bar of the opera. Today, the audience go in the theater, and pretend to see and to feel the same feeling that you are when you open up the television, the movie. So this same character, and so you have to work a lot to discover the dramaturgy. Listen is nice, but if somebody call, like Alfredo call you, come here and listen to me, what's happening? It's a very uncomfortable situation. Come like that, because normally you have to come smiling. It's a part. No, you come very sad, very. It's not nice.
Uncomfortable.
To yeah, very uncomfortable. We have to hear in the tension.
The singer is much prepared than before, because the singer is very educated. They know exactly what they said, and they go perfectly in time. Before wasn't like that, and the orchestra too. The preparation of the orchestra today is much better than 50 years before ago, of course. But to arrange this new style It's a little bit difficult, but it's lovely. I like to do that, but it's not so simple to explain what we have to do. But it's a very interesting and very collaborate work with the other people, with the orchestra, with the singer, with the choir too, with the chorus too, the same.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.